Welcome to Age Innovators, a series from the Healthy Aging Challenge community of practice, in which we spotlight pioneering innovations in longevity. We ask leading researchers and innovators what inspired their work and how it has the potential to impact people's lives. I'm Karen Wilkinson from Innovate UK KTN, and in this episode, Elaine Douglas, Associate Professor in Aging at the University of Stirling, talks to Professor Wendy Loretto and Dr. Belinda Stefan from the University of Edinburgh Business School. Elaine also talks to Mike Douglas from Age Scotland about their collaboration, which is supporting and enabling and empowering people over 50 to remain in work.
Hello, everybody. My name is Elaine Douglas, and I'm delighted to welcome today colleagues from the Shaw Project. The Shaw Project is based at the University of Edinburgh, and they help to support over 50s to remain in work for longer by creating commercially viable, scalable products to support the less visible aspects of work and the workplace. So I'm going to introduce today, we've got Wendy Loretto, Belinda Stefan, and Mike Douglas. So to start us off, I'd like to come to you, Wendy, and could you give the audience an overview of the challenge that workers and employers face?
Yes, Elaine, I can. And I think the key statistic here is that currently one in three of our workforce is aged 50 or over. And that so-called older workforce has real issues for our economy, for our social well-being, and indeed our health and well-being. The issue is that unemployment amongst the over 50s is higher than it should be. And this is an issue that successive governments have been concerned about for 10 years or more. And there have been various exhortations for people aged 50 and over to stay and work for longer, to delay their retirement, or indeed, in the most recent spring budget in 2023, to come out of retirement and get back to work. So the Chancellor has famously said, get off the golf course and come back to work. And there's even been calls for older people to get on their bikes and become delivery couriers. So this is a real live policy issue. At an organisational and individual level, there is a tension between the experience of ageing and some of the health problems that are associated with that. And also the fact, how do we manage ageing at work? And that's where Shaw comes in.
Yeah, fascinating. I mean, I can see there must be a lot of choice that people might want to make about staying on in work, or indeed about deciding when to perhaps take their foot off the gas. So some of this you're saying is exploring how health might be making an issue in the workplace.
Indeed. And another key statistic here is that about 20% of over 50s who leave work and retire before they want to, or indeed they choose to, is because of health issues. So that's okay. Why Shaw is so important.
Absolutely. So we may say that if people are able to support with their health, they might actually choose to stay in work longer.
Indeed.
Yeah, great. Fantastic. I wonder, Belinda, can I come to you now? Can you tell me, you know, what's different about your research?
Sure, absolutely. Thanks, Elaine. So as you mentioned in the introduction, in the Shaw Project, we are exploring those less visible aspects of health. So there's quite a lot of research around sitting, around musculoskeletal health and well-being. So we're really excited to explore those less visible aspects. They're under-researched. They're not as well supported in practice. So we have both an academic and a practitioner lens on this. We've entered into the project explicitly exploring menopause as an aspect of health that is still somewhat stigmatized and taboo in the workplace. And we know that at least 1 in 10 women leave work early because of menopause symptoms. We're also set out to explore cognitive aging and decline, and also any health issues relating to stresses around unpaid care and financial precarity. So they were the aspects of hidden health that we went in to explore. And we also found that sleep That was an emerging finding from our research, that that is an aspect of health that covers all of those four aspects that I've just discussed and more. So that's an emerging finding that's come out that, again, is quite under-researched and not as well supported in practice as other aspects of health and well-being. The other aspect that's quite different about our research, I would say, is the outputs that we're getting from our project. Individuals have quite limited understanding of their own health, that their attention's workplace, and actually don't necessarily have the expectation of the organizational support. We've also determined that reflection is a key component here, and that's understanding one's own health needs at work, and menopause and sleep is a really good example of that. We talk about menopause research that quite often women don't understand menopause until they're postmenopausal, and that postmenopausal reflection. So that's an important aspect. And then communication is another important finding from our project. And that's being aware of how individuals might discuss less visible aspects of health and have those awkward conversations around those sort of stigmatized or taboo aspects of health in the workplace. And I'd say finally, our research has identified the line manager role in supporting health and the communication of broader workplace supports and reinforcing workplace culture.
So there's quite a lot in there, isn't there, really? I mean, I think that area of people not understanding their own health. How do you even get to uncover that people don't understand their own health?
Well, it's fascinating in interview when we're asking sort of prompt questions, and the number of times we've had people say to us in interview, this is the first time I've spoken about menopause. Or it's a bit embarrassing, but I have prostate issues. I need to go to the loo all the time. And that's having an impact. And the interviews can get very emotional. But quite often we find that providing people with that sort of platform to talk about their health, it's sometimes the first time that individuals have had that platform if they don't want to talk about it at work or in person. So it's a real privilege, I think, to interview people about these aspects of hidden health, and it provides them with a platform. So yeah, that's how we came to have the findings we do.
I mean, that sounds fascinating in the way that you mentioned as well, the way that line managers play a role in this. And I can see that as people begin to talk about things that are perhaps a little bit difficult to discuss, that role would be very important. Can you share any kind of notable findings or success stories that have emerged from what you've done?
Well, I can actually. It's just picking up on your final point there around the role of line managers. We've got Mike Douglas with us from Age Scotland, and we're working very closely with Age Scotland around developing, or we have developed, line manager training around ageism more broadly in the workplace. And the idea is to train line managers and make them aware of those age bias and ageism. But I'll pass over to Mike, who can tell you more about that.
Thanks, Belinda. I suppose this work started in 2018 when we started working with organizations doing 9-month deep dives into the things that make life difficult for older workers. And as we've gone through that work, it's become very clear when talking to focus groups of older workers that even though the HR team may have all the policies and procedures in place, it's whether that is filtered through to the culture itself and whether the line managers themselves are living the culture of the organization or not. And, you know, Belinda talked earlier about the fact that many older workers don't really understand their own health situations, whether it's menopause or prostate or something else. If you take it from an organizational view, if the employee themselves doesn't understand the challenges they're facing or the impact of the symptoms that they're dealing with, what chance have line managers got of helping them and teasing that out? So what we've done is we've been working with the business school to create support for these line managers. In all, there are 11 different priorities that line managers need to understand in dealing with older workers. And one of those is about their health and well-being. But in addition to raising their awareness about these 11 things, it's about how do you have that conversation? Because line managers are, in today's world, genuinely quite terrified of having a conversation about your performance that might be something to do with your age or retirement or menopause or any other sort of health being that you haven't voluntarily disclosed. So we have a way of randomizing the conversation. We have four older workers, we have four line managers, each with their own backstories and things they're bringing to work that day, and four different scenarios, whether it be a performance review or an attendance review, or even just the need to discuss some inappropriate banter in the canteen. And so what we actually have for these managers is talking through this live scenario and just, I think, doing really three things for them. One is providing them clarity that actually it is okay to talk to people about these things if they are then prepared to open up about it. Delivering consistency across the workplace so that you actually build a common culture. And then lastly, just giving them the conversation to say, you know, your performance isn't quite what it was a few months ago. Can we have a conversation about what that might be? And at least if you're aware of those 11 priorities for older workers, you can try to tease out what sort of support that you can do. Because as Wendy was saying earlier, the longer that older workers can stay employed will significantly increase their wealth in retirement, which will increase their ability to eat well, which will increase their health, which reduces the reliance on state benefits, and it reduces impact on the NHS.
Yeah, absolutely. And I can see that's so important, but also so difficult. You know, I'm not sure myself how I might feel about talking about, you know, being tired at work. You don't want to feel that you would raise those things and about sleep. But this is really breaking down the barriers that people can discuss those issues.
I think that's right. And I think with people being people, there's no one-size-fits-all solution. You know, we've had situations where some women have said, oh, it's just great to be able to talk about the menopause and just understand I'm not the only one experiencing this in some sort of support group, where there are other women who say, how dare you talk to me about this? This isn't of your business. You're just my employer. And so you really do need skilled managers who are able to understand the environment and the context they're working in, but to apply a person-centric solution that really tailors that person's expectation of work.
So if I can come back now to you, Belinda, I wonder if you can talk to me a bit more about the work that you've been doing in Sleep Scotland.
Yeah, absolutely. So this just ties in with the emerging finding that we've had around sleep. And I'll just briefly tell you what we've been doing with them. Sleep Scotland were moving away from their traditional clinical base to create a workplace solution. So it's sleep for well-being. And it's a workplace accreditation model. And they had, we were talking to them about their evidence base, and Shore Project have actually provided them with a significant amount of their evidence base for their product that they have trialed now and will be launching in the autumn. So we're really excited to be working with them for their first adult-facing non-clinical sleep product. So we're very excited about that.
So it's really important to see this work moving forward. And actually, what I'm interested in is this is actually working in the workplace for people. It's not all theory. It's actually going into practice. Yeah, fantastic. I wonder if now if I can come back to you, Wendy. If you can just tell us a little bit more about how you plan to take forward these interventions that have been running in the workplace.
Absolutely. And I want to return to the recurring themes of people understanding their own health and then being able to better communicate their health support needs. So what we are doing, first of all, is we're creating an app which will bring together various forms of information about people and their health. So Belinda mentioned earlier about interviewing people. So we have data from talking to people. But we also, in the Shaw project, collected data through wearables. So some of our participants wore a smart watch, which collected information on their sleep and other activities for 12 months. And they also filled in weekly and monthly questionnaires on their smartphones, which again, we're asking about things like sleep, we're asking about stress at work, we're asking about that interaction between their health and work. And what we've been able to do is bringing the information from these three data sources is now pulling those into an app to be able to create a better understanding for the over 50s of their health and how their health and work intersect. So that's the first aspect of the app, and that's presenting it in a very visual way, but also collecting the data in, I think, quite an innovative way. So rather than having to punch in answers, you know, using those very small smartphone keypads, we're actually developing, using AI technology, we're developing chatbot interaction and interface. So that, I think that's going to be a really exciting development in the way that we sort of help people get information about their health and understand it. And then from that, what we want to do is be able to use that understanding to empower individual older employees to either have those conversations with their line managers, because once they understand better, they can then have those conversations. And this is where it ties in with the training that Mike spoke about as well. Or if in some situations where they really will not want to talk to line managers or other, say, for example, HR managers or occupational health managers, but their organization might have sometimes quite an extensive self-help menu. If an individual older employee understands their own health better, then they're in a position to be able to go in and navigate that self-help menu to select what will help support them. So we're really excited about developing this app. There are a couple of other exciting aspects too, and I'm going to pass to Belinda to share those with you.
Great, thanks very much, Wendy. So we're looking at a few other aspects of impact and how that evidence base that we've created within the Shaw project can filter through to create really practical and useful solutions. And I'll tell you about one of them today, where we're looking, again, focusing on menopause. Menopause is a really topical issue at the moment. And one of the reasons we're focusing on menopause is because of those statistics that we know that it can be so impactful for women in the workplace. There's also been a lot of information in the last few years about menopause more broadly. So it's really important that we bring a very solid evidence base to that menopause conversation and the solutions that are being created in the wider society and workplace. So to that end, we've partnered again with Age Scotland, and we're creating a bespoke menopause support for organisations solution. It's a form of diagnostic tool that we will adopt a consultancy model, and we will go into organizations. We will meet with very senior people, with menopausal women themselves, and other aspects around and other people within the organization, and to try and get a sense of how prepared these organizations are to A, have a conversation around menopause, and also to support menopause in the workplace. So we're really excited about putting that together. And I'll pass over to Mike again, because he's got some interesting developments on that.
Yeah, so it's been really interesting. Obviously, menopause has a lot of attention recently. There've been some celebrities getting involved to try and kickstart support for women in this situation. But I think one of the things in talking to HR professionals that's come out is taking some sort of workshop or support package that's been centrally designed and applying it to their own organization has felt uncomfortable for a lot of HR professionals, because different cultures and different organizations are in different states of preparedness to be able to have these conversations and to support people. You know, so for example, you know, at the one end, there'll be some organizations where, yeah, it's absolutely fine. We can get men and women in a room and we can discuss this. There'll be some other organizations where the boards just don't think this is an issue that's appropriate for the workplace, so they don't really want to get involved. There'll be other situations where actually women who've been experiencing menopause symptoms with little or no support or awareness from their managers are really reluctant to come into a workshop with those same managers who may be predominantly male and open up about these things that have been ignored for years. Why would they want to put themselves in that situation? So the advantage of this diagnostic tool is it will enable us to work out where on that cultural journey an organization is, and then be able to tailor something that says, look, this is where you are. I think we should start here and then migrate to where you want to get to, rather than just assuming that the one size fits all is going to work. And we've engaged 14 different organizations to help us co-design and test this and produce it. So we're really confident we're going to get to something that's really going to give, as Belinda said, a bespoke solution with a much greater chance of changing the culture regarding menopause in the workplace and getting it to a situation that genuinely enables women to have adaptations made that enable them to stay in the workplace with all the benefits of that that we talked about before.
Thank you, Mike. I mean, that sounds so important to bring together and make sure that people are ready to handle things in the workplace before expecting their employees to speak up. So that sounds fantastic. So can I come to you, Belinda? Coming back to you, I mean, what does the ideal future workplace look like for an older worker?
Oh, that's a good question. I'd say probably the first thing that comes to mind is just picking up from what Mike was saying. In terms of a one-size-fits-all model of managing workers over 50, doesn't necessarily, it's a good place to start to have policy, but it doesn't always trickle down to provide the support that individuals need. So I would say that more individualized support and impact from organizations to support a range of health factors, not just the ones that we can see and that people feel comfortable talking about. So I would say that would be part of the ideal future workplace. And we've spoken a lot about menopause and sleep, but there's such a broad range of health and intersecting health factors that this can relate to as well. It's quite often one impacts the other. We also have a vision for the ideal future workplace is reducing that tension between creating awareness over those less discussed aspects of health and work, which is ultimately generally a positive thing to create that awareness. But what we're very keen not to do, obviously, is to increase any stigma around those aspects of health. And this is something that I think about a lot in my research and in our research more broadly with the project, is that it's very important work that we're doing to create that awareness. And I think there's certainly a gap to do that. But there's a fine line between not then exacerbating any taboos and stigmas around these aspects of health.
And then finally, if I could briefly come to you, Wendy, can you give us, you know, what is your sort of big picture piece of advice that you would want to give to employees, employers, and supporting organisations?
Yes, thanks, Elaine. I think I'll come back to some of the themes that have run through this conversation. Firstly, for employees, it's really to be empowered to either ask for or to seek the supports that they need to better manage their health and work, and not to be in a position of ignorance, nor to be in a position of fear to ask for those supports. For employers, I think it's also a call not to be afraid of discussing these issues. Coming back to something Mike said earlier, what we're finding from a whole range of research is that because age is now a protected characteristic under the Equalities Act, many employers, many managers are afraid of raising anything that might possibly be to do with age for fear of being seen as discriminating. That's not the case. It is much better to have these conversations in all the ways we've been talking about, in a sensitive way, in an individualized way, because the risk otherwise is that one third of our workforce just ends up feeling ignored if these conversations don't happen. And finally, for policymakers, and in particular for government, it's coming back to that we're all different. And, you know, arguably we're all different from each other at any stage of our lives. But I think as we get older, those differences really do manifest themselves. They differences in health, differences in our life circumstances, differences in the choices and the control that we have over when we work, where we work, how we work, and you know, choices around retirement options. And I would definitely, you know, ask government to please think about the differences between the older workforce when they're making policy for this area. And I would just like to leave everybody with something that's maybe a challenge to us all. I think we all get caught up in the narrative of an ideal worker, that we have this notion of an ideal worker who's somebody who's always, you know, peak health and fitness, never ill, they're certainly not too old, they're always productive. And the reality is very far from that. And I think we all have a role to play in challenging that myth and actually moving the conversation forward to say, accept us as we are, and we'll work with you on that.
Thank you, Wendy. I think that's a wonderful final piece of advice note to end on. And I'd like to thank you, Wendy, Belinda and Mike for telling us more about your fascinating research and how it can make difference for workers in the future. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks for joining Age Innovators, and watch out for more episodes. This series is brought to you by the Healthy Aging Challenge Community of Practice, hosted by Innovate UK.